Thanks a lot, Dennis. One of your own priests said to me the other day, he said, "You're a brave man." And I realised that, and I'm kind of I was coming up this morning, and I'm at this hour of my life to be coming doing things like this, I felt that I was a kind of a crazy man as well. Because I'll tell you, when Dennis and the other lads came down to ask me to do this and to share whatever you have with me, I have to tell you this, that I have spent enormous time wondering what I'd say and going over it and getting rid of it and coming back to it and say, what can I say to the priests of Meath that will make any sense at this time? For this reason, that I believe that I would pity anybody that comes to talk to us in Killaloe. And one of the things I have to say straight away, you have a lot more young faces than we have. We have about 20% of the diocese now without of the parishes with no resident priest. So I see all the young faces that are here. You're doing something. So I think it's up to you. We should be coming to learn. So in other words, that I suppose I'm very aware that, as well, that we're not the easiest group of people, we the priests, to talk to about renewal or change, or for obvious reasons. Most obvious reason is some of us are tired. And I suppose we were shaped in a different kind of era and in a different model of church. And I suppose we are called on now to move towards a different kind of world. And I suppose the whole concept of renewal is being bandied around a lot. Just to fit myself in a little bit, sadly, two of my classmates from this diocese are dead, Paddy Dillon and Seamus Dunnican, two great fellows. I was saying to the bishop just before I came, I had the privilege of being hurling captain in Maynooth, and we dwindled away with hurlers, numbers generally, but eventually hurlers, and we had to convert Paddy, who was a good footballer, into a hurler. And Seamus was obviously a good footballer too. Mick is still with you and healthy and looking good, Mick Sheeran. So, and he was a fair good cornerback. I could see him thundering out in Highfield still. So that's the era we come from. That's the 60s. And one of the reasons I mentioned that, the 60s was obviously the beginning of the New Ireland. The 60s I would always describe as the decade of the great revolutions. As you know, that we had the Industrial Revolution in the 60s. Shannon, is that mine? No, I thought I switched mine on. I think I did. We had the Industrial Revolution, and Shannon, where I lived for a long number of years, was part of that. We had the Communications Revolution. We had the television for the first time. We had the Education Revolution, which was the great one in 1967, free education, and we had Vatican II. So in many ways, we had an exciting introduction to the world and to the church, because that was, and prior to that, as you know, the background from before that was that Ireland was a very definitely a pastoral scene generally, and we had the mass emigrations of the 50s and the 40s, with the economic war, with the World War II, we had economic war, with the Civil War. So in other words, Ireland moved into the wider world in the 1960s, and it had its ups and downs since then, and that brought us up to the Tiger years in the 1990s. As Dennis said, I had to take a big interest in a lot of that, because the day I was ordained, my bishop said to me then, and people often give out about bishops not looking at things, but my bishop said to me, "I'm sending you up, then you off to do more study." And I said, "For what?" And he said, and I quote him, that was Joseph Rogers, he said, "Ireland is changing, Shannon is very much part of that, and I need a priest who will try and have a look at that." In other words, reading the signs of the times. And I've always quoted Joseph Rogers as being way ahead of his time, in that he looked at that time, and he sent me off to a secular university to do that. And I actually did a thesis on the growth of cities in Britain. And that's relevant for me too, because all the mistakes they made, they were 100 years before us with an industrial revolution. And all the mistakes they made with housing estates and high-rise flats, They had learned by the 1960s that there were mistakes. But when I came back to Ireland and I said, we are doing exactly the same thing. We're repeating the mistakes that they made. We never learned. And so, for example, the massive housing estates of Limerick that have produced the major problems that have emerged since. And I began to rail against this stuff back years ago and started a rural housing organisation, which we built about 2,500 houses in 120 villages. In other words, around the concepts of family and community. And I'm still there, those concepts. So, and then, as Dennis said, we set up the Caiffin Centre in 1998, and basically because things were happening big time in Ireland, and there was no debate. The title of our first conference was, Are We Forgetting Something? And I suppose that's where I come from in the first thing I want to say. So I suppose if I was to kind of summarise in any way what I would be saying to you today in a few minutes is I would underline the importance of the local in an approach to national recovery. We hear Enda Kenny and the others saying all the time talking about global investment. But we became part of a global economic system in the 1990s, which we called the Celtic Tiger, which did massively great things for Ireland in all kinds of ways and built up a huge confidence in us. But it brought a huge amount of problems with it. And that's what I'll be keen into here, we're still there as well, that I would be emphasising the local in an approach to national recovery. And I would be saying as well, the parish in our efforts to renew the church. When I hear people talk renewal today, effectively renewal for me means the parish, because that's where the people are. And that's where we connect with people, and that's where all of us are. And I suppose I'd leave that at that, because basically, and I'll be coming to it. And then the other thing linked into that, I'd be Bishop Willie Welsh. 10 years ago, we had an assembly in our diocese, and towards the end of the assembly, I had the misfortune of posing the question of 2.5 days, what's the church for? And that led us into thinking about a pastoral plan, and it led me into trouble because Willie Welsh asked me to know would I direct that? So I spent a number of years through the last decade doing that, and that wasn't too easy. So that's the kind of world that I'd be touching into. I'll just very briefly now, very, very briefly touch on the first one, and the economic one, that in the mid-1990s, you know this as well as I do, but I want to underline one or two things within it. Ireland became part of what we call a global market economy, and that almost overnight brought us to be one of the best fed, the best housed, the best educated, and the most employed generation ever to live in Ireland. We became massively well off in a very short time and moved into it very quickly without too much of a history of that kind of thing. In other words, and side by side with that major growth in the economy, we witnessed the equally significant disengagement from structures that had shaped us up to then. And those structures, to me, included the family and the community. There were others as well, but a lot of institutions, in other words, got into serious trouble up through the 90s as we moved through that economic period. Obviously, it was a period we bought into very big. The other key point I want to make about that period was, as I see it was, and as the conferences threw up, that this is central to the global economic system. The values of that system were market values. They were commercial values. And we bought big into them. And market values, or commercial values, are fine when they belong to that world alone. But unfortunately, in Ireland, they permeated areas of life that they didn't belong to at all. Like, for example, market values became very much part of the health services. Market values became very much part of legal services. And they also impacted hugely on the family. And I just mentioned, give you one example. Housing, when I started studying and looking at, to go back to Jeremiah's time, Jeremiah Newman's time in Maynooth, housing was one of the necessities of life that was always underlined for us. But housing became a commodity for trading. And then, as you know well, it became developer-led, not community-led. And it has led to massive problems and a massive undermining of family life and huge pressures on family. In other words, a commodity that was there, that was a necessity of life, became something developer-led, and not only the developers, as you know now, but the bankers and all the rest of it bought into it. And just take, I have a couple of friends, as all of us have, maybe, of solicitors. And I had a good friend of mine down the other day, and he said, we are keeping it hard now to keep the doors open. And the main reason for that is that the construction world has taken a major dip. So in other words, all other services like that bought into it as well. And then the big housing estates, that the estates came as well, the neighbour, the isolation that has brought about, the lack of community, and so on and so on, these kind of things. I won't go into that any, because you know all of that, but there's no doubt, just to say this, the Celtic Tiger years, which were the years between 1994 and 2007, brought huge benefits to Ireland. And I'm not in any shape or form taken from that. Huge, undreamed of material benefits. But even when things were good materially, there was a lot of unease. And that's why we titled the first conference, Are We Forgetting Something? In other words, events were bringing home to us that all was not well, and we were getting very uneasy. Like, for example, even the suicide things. People coping with all of that, and that newfound world that they were. And I just mentioned things like family life, spiritual vacuum, the whole world of community. Like, then you could counter these, the rise of crude individualism, competition. So I think I'll just leave that at that, except to say that as the new Ireland during that period was being unleashed, the old one was beginning to lose much of its shine. And I always quote this man, because he was a man I tended to read a lot about, a man called Václav Havel, who was finished up president of the Czech Republic. But he gave a marvellous speech in the European Parliament one time, where he said, he summed up, a lot of what we were experiencing like this. He said, today many things indicate that we are going through a transitional period, and it seems that something is on the way out, and something else is painfully being born. It is as if something were crumbling, decaying and exhausting itself, while something else, still indistinct, were arising from the rubble. And I think we are somewhere in there now. We are in the transitional years, we are in the cleansing years, we are in the changing years, in huge change. And I suppose that's what you and I and others have to cope with now. And how we do that is not easy. And so I'll just move from that kind of world quickly, because I know that you haven't that much time. So what I have to say, I suppose, then, basically is this, that for the rest of it, from our point of view, is to do with how we connect the gospel messages with the world. And where is that world for us? And I'm basing it on three sources. Simply the first one from John 3. In other words, if you don't base these things now in some kind of fairly authoritative source, you're going nowhere. And John 3 that says, God loved the world so much he sent his son. Now, I underline, this is the piece that nearly directs my life in many ways. God loved the world. He loved the world. And the second one is from Vatican II, a piece from there, and the third one is from John Paul's Millennium Document. And just very briefly, back to those sources, the world for most of us, here anyhow, is the local, is the parish, it's the community, it's where people live, it's where they're at. And the commercial values of the global economic system obviously impact seriously on them, on the people we serve. And so we're challenged, obviously, to counter those values with the values, the gospel values. So when we talk about renewal, we must take serious account of these, of the gospel values, which run counter to these, like individualism, community, and so on, family, truth rather than spin. You could go through a whole list of them. What are the gospel values to counter the values of that economic system? The second one, the council document, the church in the modern world. I used to have a huge problem with this because we touched into a number of the documents, but I thought we almost totally ignored the Church in the Modern World document, and we're paying a huge price for that now, and we have to get back to it. I really believe this, and I just gave you a piece that led up to it. The Council set out to embark on a genuine renewal of the Church. That's what we're at now again. And the key document setting out its approach to this was called the Church in the Modern World. It was based on a central decision which would focus on the answer to a question put by the world. Church of Christ, what do you say of yourself? What's the point of the church in today's world? How do we connect into that world? And I think that question asked for more than a statement of the church's own sense of identity. And I'll be at this in, just to make this point, that the council stressed the concepts of the people of God and so on and so on. And I'll touch into that in a few minutes. And then the third one was the papal document. Could I just say before I come, or the other one, John the 23rd, I'm taking a bit of a chance in this now, but I'll say it. Maybe as we move through this transition period and we try to struggle with it, and some of us are getting older and tireder and fewer, not you, but certainly us in our diocese, that we are probably suffering, maybe as a church, from a certain tiredness. Maybe a lot of engagement with things, with ritual, all hugely important. And I'm going to say this, I take a chance on it, but too little engagement with Christianity. And hopefully when I move to the other, it would even maybe appear that Christianity itself is suffering an enormous loss of meaning. Christianity, what's that? Christian values, what are they? How we connect to them? How do we connect them practically into where we are? So I believe this, that in our efforts to renew at this time, and we're hearing a lot about it, I think there's a lot of narrowing has taken place. We are tending to look, I think, too much at ourselves, and even what's gone on over the last few weeks, I think we're looking too much at ourselves, concerned only with ourselves. We lick our wounds, we want to create a renewed church for ourselves, and we're not tending to see any longer that the church doesn't exist for herself. The church exists for the world. We have forgotten that the starting point is the world, and the world is where are the people we serve, and what their realities are. And the final thing I just want to say on that is, I think we're struggling as well to be able to find a language for expressing ourselves in contemporary society. So if I was to say anything today, that's what I believe, that I wouldn't waste too much energy, me personally I'm talking about now, in changing the Vatican or in changing the bishops or in changing anything else. Where I feel the renewal has to be, for me, is in Six Mile Bridge, in the parish where I am, and where we can do things there or move into things there. And that as well, the council, the Gospels tend to point that direction. The council did, and the final one was John Paul II. At the close of the Jubilee year, 2000, as you know, he wrote a wonderful letter entitled At the Beginning of the New Millennium. And in that letter, he invited local churches, again, local churches across the world, to take up the challenge of bringing the good news of the gospel to the world of this century. And he asked that each local church would begin the task by drawing up an effective post-Jubilee pastoral plan, reminding us that any such plan was to have its centre in Christ himself. So I think the two messages that I get from that is, as I got from the other documents, are local and Christ-centred. And now I'm moving on to where we have our own experience that from that, and I'll just give you a few things that we've picked up as we moved along. 10 years ago, in January 2002, we agreed as a body in the diocese there was a call for a pastoral plan for the diocese. And for the next 18 months, a small committee of priests, religious and lay people worked on the plan, led by Bishop Willie Walsh. I used to have worked fairly closely with him and finding this thing quite difficult. I used to say to him at times, I said, you know, I have a title called Director of Pastoral Planning, but isn't that your job? The bishop is the Director of Pastoral Planning. And what I was trying to say to him, that when I was finding this difficult, if the bishop isn't at the very heart of this fully, then you won't move it. It isn't easy to move it. But we began the whole process with having set up this little group with an extensive consultation process across the diocese and outside it. In other words, we sat down with different groups of people over about an 18-month period, and that included people who had moved away from the church and why they moved and so on. And we launched the plan in 2004. And here is the other point that I want to make, that if you're moving in that direction or something like it, that we regarded it as simply a work in progress to be refined and readjusted as we moved along and as we were experiencing things. I got the job of trying to implement it. We based the plan on three visions, because I suppose without vision, we do need a vision. And it is only as we move through this, I saw how important the vision was. The first was a papal vision. The challenge, the one that I've quoted, the challenge of bringing the gospel to the world of 21st century. And that within that, the Pope mentioned, like Peter moving out into the deep, he and his companions, that we were invited and to have the courage and the confidence to push out into the deep that now is Ireland and the changing Ireland. And I think that was hugely important, that we, the courage to do it. And it's in the local churches that the details of the plan can be identified, which will enable the proclamation of Christ, and I quote here, to reach people, to mould communities, and have a deep and incisive influence in bringing gospel values to bear on society and culture. The Pope, in that document, set out a number of priorities, and among these, he places particular emphasis on holiness, and I'd be coming back to that under prayer and spirituality, and holiness, a spirituality of communion, that if we have anything with that. I did a little interview on Clare FM for something else last night. They said that that's what we're about, communion, community. And the third one was compassionate action on behalf of those in need. And so while the Pope calls us to action, he emphasizes that our actions must constantly arise from the practice of prayer. And I'd say we were eased into that. Eased into it, I'm saying this. It was a God that we moved a little bit away from going out to say Mass as against underlining the importance of the Sunday liturgy, and the people gathering, and what we were to bring to it. I'll touch into that again. And the gospel vision, the first was the papal vision, the second was the gospel vision. At the core of the plan is Christ himself, who is to be known, loved, and imitated.